Next case is Robert Burton versus Joanne Barnhart. This would be Mr. Shaw.
I'm Joseph Shaw representing Mr. Burton. The main problem with this case is that the ALJ failed to connect the dots. He left out dots that were very significant evidence in favor of the claimant's case, and that is against the law of the Seventh Circuit and the Social Security Administration. First of all, in regard to credibility, it was the judge's finding that this individual could do essentially sedentary work with a sit-stand option. And it was Mr. Burton's position that he had good days and bad days, and although on good days he could probably perform that kind of work, on bad days he could not. And the vocational expert testified that if an individual would miss more than 2 days a month of work, that individual would not be able to sustain any kind of employment in the economy. And his psychiatrist supported that in regard to his psychological problems. He said he would miss several days more than that per month. And his testimony, I believe, confirms that also he would miss that many. So that's the issue in the case. Can he sustain this? Now, the important evidence that was left out in his credibility was not discussed by the ALJ. First of all, was a statement from his former employer. He worked for a home health care company, and he was a home health care aide. He couldn't do that. So because of his back problems, his employer put him in the office scheduling, which was a job that was sitting. You could alternately sit and stand. But he wasn't able to perform that even on a part-time basis. And his employer said that. A fellow employee said that. He said he could not continue this because of his pain. But this evidence was not accounted for by the ALJ. A second important piece of evidence was left out was that he hired 10 hours worth of home health aide help to help him take care of his small apartment and do whatever necessary during a month. That was purchased beginning in July of 2003. That would indicate
what do you call that home what? Home health or help?
He purchased it from the same company he worked for, so it was home health aid, I guess would be the best
home
way to
health,
put it.
Health.
They did certain things for him, probably whatever he wanted him to do, and it's not clear from the record exactly what he had him do, but he purchased help to take care of his home and the things that he needed, his apartment.
Okay.
The third thing that I think is important is interviewed this person, interviewed Mr. Burton, and I think his comments are important. The claims representative observed that he was a little agitated, he was hesitant in answering questions, that he was fatigued, and he put his, at the end of the interview or near the end of the interview, he put his head down on the desk. And so this is essentially a sedentary activity. You could alternately sit and stand if you want to, but he could not tolerate this. Now, this particular comments by the claims representative are very important because Social Security ruling 96-7P says that in looking at the credibility of the claimant, the ALJ must take into account the comments of the claims representative. So I think those are important. By law, he's required to do that. And he did not account for that dot. Now, there are some other things I mentioned in my brief. I'm just going to mention briefly here in regard to this. His medicines never quite controlled his pain. he received only transitory relief. He would get relief from the epidural blocks, and then he would have to come back again because it didn't work. In fact, just before the hearing, he was back with the orthopedic doctor for that. He saw a chiropractor, and he lost 100 pounds to try and relieve pain, but apparently that did not work either. The judge did not.
That reference was correct, then, that 100 pounds. That kind of confused me. Said it's something about it, not losing 100 pounds or something. But anyway, that was a corrective measure that he...
Did he attempt it on his own?
He had to lose 100 pounds, and he did?
Yes, that's my understanding, yes. He was a very heavy man.
Also, smoking, apparently that was a constant admonition as far as something he was supposed to quit.
I believe so, Judge, yeah. I don't remember that comment right now, but...
Well, it seemed to me that was... about every other doctor was saying that. I may be wrong, but I thought that was in there.
I'll take your word for it, Judge.
I hope you know better than I do.
Yeah, okay. The ALJ did not make that an issue in the case. So, now, in regard to the treating doctor opinion, there was an opinion from his psychiatrist and the ALJ that I've referred to before. The ALJ rejected that because he found that it was based on the subjective symptoms and not clinical and laboratory evidence, and that it was inconsistent with the state agency doctor's opinions and the consultative examiner, Dr. Berry, and it was only based on two visits. Now, the judge did not, again, connect the dots. There was clinical evidence. There were clinical findings made by the psychiatrist that the ALJ did not mention. I've listed those in my brief. There were many of those, but this was not mentioned. And he does not explain why he did not consider that objective evidence. So there was more than just the subjective symptoms that this opinion was based upon. Second of all, in regard to the state agency doctors and the consultative examiners, there's evidence in the file, in the transcript, that his condition psychologically worsened since Dr. Berry's evaluation, the consultative examiner, in August of 2002. He testified at the hearing that he started feeling depressed like he had been before. He was hospitalized when he was younger and when he attempted to commit suicide. And he was diagnosed, and at this present time, he was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, which essentially is depression with some major symptoms of schizophrenia, hallucinations, delusions, something like that. And so he has a major psychological condition that's lifelong here. And he went ahead and went into treatment. He said he had some counseling in March of 2003 for something else. He went back to them, saw them in July, missed some appointments, started seeing them at the end of 2003. They referred him to the psychiatrist. There is an opinion from one of the therapists that closely matches the psychiatrist. So we think that there was a change in condition here. And I'm going to reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Mr. Martin.
Good morning. May it please the court, John Martin for the Social Security Administration. We believe that the judge very well connected the dots here, and that's exactly what Judge Hamilton found in his district court decision. Mr. Schultz today brings up the argument about missing 3 days of work. The only doctor of record who said anything about the possibility of him missing 3 days of work was the psychiatrist, Dr. Birch. Mr. Burton has alleged an onset date of April 2002. Dr. Birch did not even see Mr. Burton until January of 2004. After that, Dr. Birch saw him one more time in February of 2004. And then after the hearing, Dr. Birch submitted a form that he simply made some check marks on, and one of those check marks said, how many days do you think this person will miss work? And Dr. Birch said, more than 3 days a month. That is the only doctor of record who says anything at all about Mr. Burton missing work. Mr. Scholl also brings up a lot of evidence regarding his inability to do the scheduling job. He had worked as a home health aide, and then, after he found he could not do that job, which the vocational expert described as a very heavy job, or at least a medium job, he went to this scheduling job. He tried to do that job for a very short time and then decided he could not do it. There is some evidence from that time suggesting that his condition was pretty serious at that time. That is April of 2002. However, after that, he received treatment from at least three doctors that was pretty effective. He received treatment from his regular physician, Dr. Lawton, and Dr. Lawton, once he realized he had a PARS defect, was able to adjust his treatment and was very successful with that treatment. He also, at that time, which is around May of 2003, saw a Dr. Lillo. Dr. Lillo started to do injections. And as of August 2003, Dr. Lillo said he's had a very good result from two injections, one in July of 2003 and one in August of 2003, and I really don't even think I need to see him anymore. My treatment is so effective. And after that, he did go back to Dr. Lillo again, but not until January of 2004.
These injections address what issue?
I think the PARS defect in his back. Because around July of 2003, Dr. Lawton, who's the doctor he sees on a fairly regular basis, who's also prescribing Paxil for the mental impairment and is also treating the physical problems, says in a note around July of 2003 that he's seen this Dr. Lillo, and Dr. Lillo has found something a little different from what we were treating, and that is he's found the PARS defect, and Dr. Lillo was able to find an effective way of treating that. Also around that time, just to see if he needed surgery, they referred him to another doctor, Dr. Hevelon, I think is the way you pronounce it, and Dr. Hevelon did objective studies like an MRI, looked at the MRI and said, well, I do see a PARS defect on there. He described it as not very dramatic, and he gave advice that was very conservative advice as far as his treatment went. He simply said, stay active, increase your activities, stop smoking, as you said, and also consider physical therapy. Now, another interesting thing about Dr. Hevelon's examination is that it appears that Mr. Burton brought in some kind of a form and asked Dr. Hevelon to rate his abilities to do certain tasks. And Dr. Hevelon said, I'm really not that qualified to do something like that. Why don't you get a physical capacities evaluation? And that will give us a much better idea of that. There's no indication that Mr. Burton ever did that. So when Mr. Burton says he has good days and bad days and things like that, we submit that he had a way to investigate whether or not he'd be able to do these things. Dr. Hevelon suggested that to him in May of 2003. Mr. Burton did not do that. Then after that, he continues his treatment with Lawton pretty consistently. He's seeing him about once a month. Lawton brings the mental impairment pretty well under control in July of 2003 because he's able to reduce Paxil back down to 20 milligrams in July of 2003. And then, as I said, in August of 2003, he also starts seeing Dr. Lillo. Lillo performs the epidural in July and in August, and then he doesn't need to see Lillo again until January of 2004. So the point here is that the physical impairment was under good control. He did not need any surgery. And as you said, one of the things the doctors were very concerned about was his smoking. It's not only Dr. Hevelon who mentions the smoking. It's Dr. Agrawal, who he saw for his shoulder problem. And I think it's also Dr. Cooper who mentions that, who he saw for a knee problem that came up in October of 2003. And at the hearing, he testified that the knee problem, as well as the shoulder problem, had been well taken care of.
We lost 100 pounds. That must have done something.
Yes. that would have improved his condition too. But I think the doctor who really comments on that is Dr. Hevelon, and Dr. Hevelon again reports very, very minor objective findings, and even after that we see a good improvement in his physical condition. As far as the mental condition goes, I will very briefly address that. He's a person, as we said, this case starts in April of 2002. He doesn't get any mental treatment whatsoever until he goes for an intake interview in July of 2003. He doesn't follow that up until December of 2003 when he starts seeing a counselor named Rebecca Light. She refers him to Dr. Birch, who I talked about. Dr. Birch only saw him twice. One of the things an ALJ is supposed to evaluate is the length of the treatment relationship with a doctor. This is an extremely short treatment relationship, and also the quality of the treatment relationship. There's no notes from Dr. Birch whatsoever. Dr. Birch says he saw him twice. There are no notes from either of those visits. All he did was fill out a form in March of 2004, and even that is not that inconsistent with the other evidence. When he saw Dr. Berry in August of 2002, Dr. Berry said he had a global assessment of functioning of 74. Dr. Birch says his global assessment of functioning is 65, which still indicates a very good ability to act in social situations and other facets of just regular life. So for all those reasons, we would ask that you affirm the commissioner's decision in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Scholl?
Well, the ALJ's case, or the ALJ's decision has gained a lot of wording since he made it. First of all, he just said the GAF is 65. The ALJ didn't say anything about that. He didn't say that was a reason for rejecting that's post hoc argument. Smoking. That's more post hoc argument. The ALJ didn't say that I'm discrediting this person because he was smoking. Apparently, he was okay with the ALJ. Maybe it wasn't. The ALJ didn't say so. FCE, the functional capacity evaluation. The judge didn't say anything about that. He didn't discredit the testimony because of that. That came in here in federal court. That was not what was said by the ALJ. That, again, is post hoc impermissible argument.
What's post hoc? I mean, the doctors, I mean, obviously smoking, that's a common refrain. Every doctor that knows you smoke tells you to quit. It may not, I assume it exacerbates other things, but most people don't quit when the doctor tells them to. He did lose 100 pounds. That's pretty impressive. But I don't know what's post hoc if it's in the doctor's report.
Well, what I'm saying is the ALJ did not use that to discredit his testimony. He didn't discredit his testimony because he didn't stop smoking. Okay, he discredited his testimony for other reasons. And the court can only go with the reasons that were given by the ALJ. You can't go with, you know, reasons that counsel gives in the case. And I see my time's up, so.
Yeah, time's expired. Okay, this case will be taken under advisement. Thanks to both counsel.